to A Trifling Place, a podcast dedicated to exploring the ins and outs of Charlotte. Every city has its share of traffic issues. In Charlotte, for example, there are a lot of complaints about rush hour near Ballantyne on I-485. But today, we're not talking about the quality of the Charlotte region's roads. We'll focus on an issue the Charlotte Department of Transportation has a little more control over: traffic lights. I only moved here in August, so I've asked veteran WFAE reporter Lisa Miller to help me out.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Tesney.
So how was your commute this morning?
Well, it was okay. As you know, there have been a few times I've complained about the traffic lights.
Yeah, I know. Tell me again, what's wrong with the traffic lights here?
Okay, well, I always seem to get stuck at the red lights, and then they seem to last so long. And then the worst thing is when the light turns green and the car in front of you doesn't move.
So we hit the road to investigate.
It is 8:16 a.m. and we are driving towards Charlotte from the university area.
We're on Tryon right now. So this is actually, for a long time, my route home until I got so fed up with all the traffic lights and the timing that I decided just to take the highways.
We're joined by a traffic expert. He's Martin Kane, a professor at UNC Charlotte's Civil and Environmental Engineering Department.
Charlotte, primarily with the exception of the downtown area, is built like what I call a hub and spoke type system. You have the central core, which is laid out pretty much in a grid pattern.
And once you leave the center city, we have streets like Tryon and Providence that branch out like the spokes of a wheel. It's these streets that are especially problematic, Kane says, because
you don't have consistent spacing throughout the whole corridor. It's very hard to make that work in both directions. We try to get it so that everybody is equally unhappy.
But today's drive is smooth cruising. I'm kind of disappointed. I wanted to see what Lisa occasionally gripes about.
Perhaps I'm your good luck charm. We'll see if that
Yes.
But our luck soon ran out when we came to Providence and Queens. CDOT warned us about this intersection. Earlier, Professor Kane had said when people are stuck in traffic, they could occupy themselves by flashing their lights, at least during the daytime. That's an idea that resonates with Lisa.
So now it seems like we're at saturation point right here, because we're, again, here we're at Providence, Queens, and it looks like there's cars waiting all over here. I like your idea that when you tell people that they should flash their lights because it makes the time go faster. I mean, what do you do when you're sitting at a light like this? Do you feel like, as a traffic engineer, you're probably a more patient person than most of us out there who are sitting here thinking, it's the second red light that I've sat through?
Well, usually I'm trying to analyze what's going on.
His wife says he doesn't use his horn enough. And he says he almost never sits in traffic because he always plans in advance. And he knows when the roads are busy. If it's busy, he just doesn't go out. But as reporters, Lisa and I have to leave whenever news breaks.
So whenever I'm trying to go to the government center, there's always this long line when I'm trying to make a left turn here on East 4th Street.
Are we going to make it? Are we going to make it on one green? It looks like we're going to do it this time. Sometimes it takes me a couple.
Here, Kane explains, it actually depends on the cars in front of you. The detector is counting the number of cars, but it's also measuring the time between vehicles. So, for example, we were third in line at that intersection. If the light turns green and the first car goes, but the driver of the second car is drinking coffee or daydreaming and they stall before turning, the detector counts the first vehicle, but then it senses there's a big gap between the first car and the second car. So what happens then is the cycle cuts short because it thinks there's not a lot of traffic. So that second car will get through, but we won't. Professor Kane finds this frustrating.
The objective during this time is commuting. We're trying to get from point A to point B, where this is not a, shouldn't be a joyride. When they caused that cycle to be shortened because they did not move soon enough, that irritates me, because if I'm behind them, there's a good chance I might not get through the intersection, but they will. And so they didn't suffer for their lack of attention. I did.
Just a few minutes later, we were waiting in another left turn lane on South Boulevard and the Belk Freeway.
Oh, see? Is my problem. Wait, this is kind of confusing, though. I was just that bad driver, that aggravated, aggravating driver. I got a honk.
Yes.
Because I was not realizing it was a flashing orange where I could go ahead. So there you go.
After our car ride with Professor Kane, I still had a few more questions about the city's 736 traffic signals.
My name is Charles Abel. I'm the Transportation Systems Manager for the City of Charlotte.
Abel gave me a tour of one of the city's transportation management centers. It's in the basement of Charlotte's old City Hall, across the Government Center. The walls are lined with large TVs that stream video from 9 of the 300 traffic cameras in the city. There are half a dozen computers that technicians use to choose which intersections they need to monitor.
If they see something like maybe there's an accident and one leg of a road is closed and all the traffic's being diverted at that point, then they could change the timing at that intersection so that, say, the left turn, which normally would only get, let's for an example, say 16 seconds, we would change it so that it would get 40 seconds or something. Or something like that to help people get through the intersection.
There are only two signal technicians who work out of the CMPD Law Enforcement Center during peak traffic hours in the morning and evening. Abel uses a joystick to zoom into intersections on the large TV displays. I asked him to zoom into the intersection where Lisa and I had been waiting for a really long time, Providence and Queens. On the screen, we can see that they had built a new curb at that intersection. And I do remember now that there was a lot of construction where we were waiting. At most intersections, you'll see incision marks in the pavement where the wire runs underground. It detects the metal from your car when you run over it and sends the information up the pole to the traffic signal box.
We have vehicle detectors that are in the pavement, and when they come through with construction like that, it tears out all our detectors. And once we lose detection, then we're pretty much having to guess what the traffic's going to be.
It's technology that's 50 years old, but it's still the most reliable method of detection. While we were driving back to the office, I had one last question for Professor Kane.
If you had all of the money in the world, how would you improve our traffic system?
King of
Charlotte. All the money in the world is not going to fix all of the traffic problems. You know, a city is necessarily congested.
Kane's response is basically, what's a city without traffic? The imaginary traffic king of Charlotte says he would spend the money on public transportation and encouraging people to bike and walk. This is Tasneem Shama for A Trifling Place.